I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. We discuss music now with Barry Coleman. He's the music director and conductor of the Shenandoah Symphony Orchestra in Lexington and an associate professor of music at Washington and Lee University. He's also a renowned guest conductor of various orchestras around the world. We'll talk about music and his recent book, The Language of Music Revealed. It teaches the reader how to read, write, and appreciate music. One of the things I want to talk to Mr. Coleman about is music and what he's gained from it with regards to one of his kids, a daughter who's autistic. He's a recording artist, too. You can read all about Barry Coleman on his website at maestrocoleman.com. The book is from Universal Publishers, and you can buy the book off of his website or at jwpepper.com. Please welcome to the Plant on the Line program from Lexington, Virginia, Barry Coleman. Maestro Coleman, good morning.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Very good
to be on your show.
Thanks for joining us. I'm not someone who plays a musical instrument. I don't read music, but I have an appreciation of music as like anybody else. That, you know, I've got an iPod. You know, I hum. I sing in the shower if unheard. This book that you've written, The Language of Music Revealed, is fascinating because it's something that anybody can pick up and read, and they can get, they can get something out of it in terms of if they want to learn how to read or write music. What do you find compels people to do that, to read and write music?
Well, I think it starts from learning. You know, this is a country after the American Revolution. Music making was part of the culture at home. People would have their own personal family soirees. So playing music is a long, long history about playing music. And a lot of times they would just pick up the instrument and learn by ear, whether it's a guitar or a piano. And I think as people got more proficient, they wanted to write their own material rather than to pick up something by ear. So and many of these people could not read or write music. So I think out of that necessity and desire to be more creative, people are clamoring to actually learn and write music and chords and learn how these composers wrote these tunes that they're picking up by ear.
And so people picking up the book, because I'm assuming the people listening to this haven't read the book yet, they can, once they get through the whole thing, I mean, it's a big book, but it's not inaccessible, they can read, write music, right?
That's right, and that was the idea of the book. I teach, I'm a professor of music at Washington and Lee, and I do teach some non-music majors, and I was trying to find a textbook. And so many of them are either way above people's heads, even above my head, or they're just too boring to keep an interest of non-musicians. So I try to find a book that goes step by step, very easy, lots of examples, easy language, a little humor, some exercises to practice, plus an answer key. So in one volume, you're able to go from what is a staff, to, you know, very basics, to ending up quoting your own melody towards the end of the book and learning what a chord is in very simple language.
Well, what fascinates me, Professor Coleman, about people who have an aptitude for music, especially when you see like prodigies at a young age, who can, you know, play all sorts of things on the piano. That must be something that they're born with, is that right?
Yes, they are. I mean, there's a five-year-old pianist, you know, floating around now doing concerts. But it really is, you know, almost like a Mozart. That's the type of person that's kind of born with that gift. You can't learn to be a Mozart, for sure.
And then so if one is of an advanced age, like I'm 30, is there still time for me to, say, play the piano or learn another instrument, say?
Oh, absolutely. And you know, I live in rural Virginia, and besides the students I teach, there are many people from town who are guitar players and play in a country western band and are out of school in their 30s or older. And it's never too old to learn to write music. They email me and ask me about the book. The book is written so that, you know, it's not a baby book. It's written in a mature language, but easily understood by anybody, whether you're a student, whether you're a high school student, whether you're a retired person who just wants to pick up the guitar or learn how to play piano and learn how to read music. So, you know, it took me about 4 or 5 years to write the book because I got input from these people, from students, from people from town, from retired people. So I tried to make a book that could answer everybody's questions about how to read and write music.
The one thing that struck me from looking at your book was the universality of music. I mean, you conduct, guest conduct orchestras throughout the world, and I'm assuming that a lot of the players in those orchestras don't speak a language that you share. So, but you connect through the music, don't you?
That's right, and that's what I, when I teach the class, that's why I impress upon my students that you know, what you're learning right now, you can go to Russia, you can go to China, you can go to India, and show this music to them, what you've written, and they'll understand that. They might not understand your language, but the language of music is certainly universal. So, and people from China can come over and show their music to you, and you can understand that. So it brings the world closer together through music.
And you found a connection through music with your daughter?
Yes, my daughter is high-functioning with autism, and we found a real neat way. My wife is a counselor, and so we wanted to do a little project to try to help Manoah cope with autism. With the help of my wife and myself, we developed some lesson plans. I play clarinet, so I was teaching her clarinet, and we found that music really has charmed to soothe the savage breast. Her behavior was modified. It's a frustrating world to have autism. And music was one place where she can go. She's in the school band. She sings in the choir. And makes her calm. It makes her feel free, in her own words.
Now you've had music in your life, even before you had kids. Does an experience like this in connecting music with your daughter, does that teach you about music that you've seemingly known about throughout your life?
I grew up in New York City, and you know, I wanted to be a musician by the age 6. So my teachers were from the old school, very strict, very very task master like, and so I had to learn music, you know, in a very special kind of rigorous way, and I guess that's how it is. If you want to be a fine musician. With all the competition, you have to sit alone on a Friday night and practice for 6 hours. So it tends to be a solitary a profession. And sometimes you wonder, you know, why am I doing all this stuff? And it took me until I was, you know, later on in my career to realize, hey, I'm doing this maybe for a greater good, not so much me, but for other people. And having Manoah, my daughter, as my student, made it all worthwhile. All those hours in practice rooms, all those auditions, all the rejection letters, it all came to a head for me last summer when we started to teach Manoah that, you know, music, God gave me this talent, and now I know how to use it.
Well, what's your schedule like in terms of teaching at Washington and Lee and conducting the Shenandoah Symphony? Is that, do you split your time half between both?
Right. It's a busy schedule. I teach three classes, actually, and plus the administrative stuff you have to do when you're a college teacher. And then the other half of my life, third of my life, is with the symphony, and it's, you know, it's very involved to be a conductor. It's not just standing up there waving your arms. There's much more prep work than anybody realizes. It is kind of a lonely life being a conductor. But when it all comes together, when you have that concert, when you have an orchestra as great as mine with such great musicians, and you stand up there and they're smiling at you, you feel real good about it, and there's a great audience behind you, it all becomes worth it. I think all musicians that we work for that 15 minutes, the 20 minutes where it all comes together, and you kind of transcend from where you are, and you say to yourself, that's why I became a musician. And with Noel, really drove the point home to me is that's why I really became a musician.
Yeah, how many pieces have you got in the Shenandoah Symphony?
Well, it depends on the repertoire. Sometimes we do smaller concerts. Sometimes we do a large concert. This next concert, we're doing music from the Americas, from South America and North America. So we use a very large orchestra, between about 85 players.
And so I've always wondered this when you're at the front of the orchestra and someone's sick or something like that, you're missing one player. Let's say, I don't know how many violinists you might have, but let's say one of them is out for the night. Can you hear that when you're up there?
Yeah, it's amazing. You know, you have 30 violin players, you know, maybe 16 first and 14 seconds. And because I've been doing this over 35 years, you develop a really keen ear, and you can hear things that are missing. Even one person who is missing, you know, is that 1% or a half percent of sound that is missing from that one empty chair. And you become pretty sensitive about sounds around you when you become a conductor. So you can pick out a particular person who's missing. You also tend to know the type of person, the way he or she plays. You can get that personal. If you're a good conductor, you know your people, you know your players by heart. You can stand behind a screen and have somebody play, and you know that's John or Sue, or, you know, that particular person.
And is it more difficult? Like, I mean, I see on television sometimes, you know, like a big 4th of July thing where there are hundreds of musicians on stage. Is it more difficult if there are more people on stage with you?
It gets complicated for sure. The score, the music that I read from, is certainly much larger and, you know, entails much more on my part of hearing. But, you know, as a conductor of so many years, I've conducted pieces that had, a 400 voice choir and a 100 piece orchestra, 500 people on stage. And so you gotta know your stuff. Again, the prep work that you do before you get up on that stage, if you haven't done your homework, everybody can sense blood in the water. No matter what talent you have, whether you're an amateur or a professional, if you don't have your act together, it really is self-destruction. So before you get up there, you have that responsibility to your players, to your singers, to do your homework. And those conductors that don't do their homework, they think they can handle it, turn out to fall flat in their face. So you got to do your homework, you got to listen, I've been doing this for so long, you can take a piece of music, and I already know where the problem spots are going to be. So you anticipate things that probably will go wrong and hopefully have the answers, because you don't have too much time. You have to really think fast on your feet. You can't have 400 people waiting around when you're trying to figure out how to fix something. So if something goes wrong, either with the choir or the orchestra, you have 15 seconds to say what's wrong and how to fix it. If you can't do it in 15 seconds, then get off the podium and have somebody else conduct the orchestra.
Do you find that the discipline you have at the podium, the discipline that a conductor has at the podium, does that translate into their own personal life, their private life, that they're able to keep things compartmentalized and organized even?
The musicians, the music is so much part of their lives. They do go home and they have their own students. They listen to music. The orchestra does become a big part of their life. But you know, you have to have a family life as well as your music life. Music being so totally encompassing, sometimes can bleed into your private life. And so you have to be smart about it and realize that you should leave some of it back on stage and take care of your family and be serious about that. At the same time, music in your family, as in my family, has played such an important part not just with Marnell, but with all my other kids and with my wife. So you can blend the two together.
Now, as a conductor, you're looking for perfection. I mean, that's just a given, considering what your job is. But symphonic music has the rap that it's stuffy, that it's elitist. At least the people that go to shows and the sort can be considered stuffy or elitist. How do you disabuse people of that notion and make symphony music accessible to everyone?
Do I make the music accessible to everybody?
Yeah.
Well, you have to know your audience, and you have to know who you're playing for, and you try to, you need to have a very extensive repertoire. You need to know what works in Lexington may not work in Berlin. You have to, and even the orchestras you've never conducted before. When I guess conduct some orchestras, I've returned a second time, so I know the audience. But for the first time, you really need to do your homework again. You need to go on, and now with the computer, everybody has a website. You can go online. You can see what music they have been doing, and you can get a pulse of the orchestra. Doesn't mean you get it right 100%. Sometimes I didn't. But as you get more and more experience, you can get a feel of what works for your audience, what works for your players. And there's many different groups that you have to satisfy. You have to certainly satisfy your players so they don't get bored, and you're challenging them, and they get better and better. You can challenge your audience, but you don't want to turn them off. So you have to find, there's lots of music out there. So you find particular pieces that will appeal to your audience. At the same time, it could be an uplifting experience for them. We're doing a symphony by Randall Thompson, and very few people have heard of this composer. But he writes like Copland. He's an American composer. There's a lot of good tunes in it. So you end up finding these gems as you go along your career. And I know my audience is going to love this. We have music from Brazil and Argentina with lots of percussion and rhythm, and I know my audience will like that as well. So, you know, there's certain, staples of music that, people love rhythm, they love melodies. I mean, there's certain things that I think everybody across the world loves to beat their foot, to hear a nice melody, to hear a full brass section. So there's a couple of universals there as a conductor.
And you're a great champion of film music, too, right? I know you play a lot of that in your programs.
Yes, that's part of my hobby. I recorded two film scores. I was able to get the actual music from Hollywood, from the Warner Brothers studio. Very, very grateful to them to give me the entire score to Treasure, Sierra Madre, and the Charge of the Light Brigade, and I distilled about a 35-minute suite from each film, because a lot of the music is repetitive in film music. So I have two suites that I recorded of all the most important parts of the film, and I just love it. I just can't get enough of it. I'm working on another film with Kurt Weill, who's the composer, and Ira Gershwin is the lyrics, a music comedy. And I see no reason why good film music, like from Steiner, which is the composer, Max Steiner, which is the composer I recorded. His background is from Light Romantic. I think one of his relatives is Strauss or Wagner. So he writes really good stuff. You can dig in and find some more contemporary music. Some of the music that John Williams wrote is really good stuff. And why can't that be part of the concert repertoire?
Yeah, it's recognizable music, isn't it? I mean, you talked about Steiner. You can't really think of Now Voyager without thinking of the score for that, right?
Absolutely. Max Steiner, King Kong, he just almost is a household name, even in this generation. And the music of John Williams, some of the Star Wars music, mm-hmm. some of his early music, he wrote the score to The Cowboys that starred John Wayne, has a fantastic Red Overture that is available right now. And his friend Waxman wrote some great music for films in the 1940s, 1930s.
Barry, this has been an interesting conversation. Thanks for your time today, and continue good luck with your book.
Well, thank you very much. It's been my pleasure to be on your show.
Thanks for joining us. The website for more, maestrocoleman.com. The book is called The Language of Music Revealed. Its author, Barry Coleman, on the line from Lexington, Virginia, in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.